Welcome to the Bahamas Reef Environment Educational Foundation's Our Blue Bahamas podcast here on Guardian Radio, where we talk about promoting the conservation of the Bahamian marine environment that sustains our way of life. Today, we're talking about tackling invasive species and the role of closed seasons, with a focus on invasive species in the Bahamas and the importance of closed seasons for sustainability. Today, I have in the studio with me SDG, which is Sustainable Development Goals Ambassador, Samantha Ramirez, and we have our very own Jasmine and Heather from Brief. I'm Crystal, your host. So let's just jump into it, because this is something that we're all, I think, very well versed on. What are some of the most common invasive species in the Bahamas, and how do they threaten our marine ecosystems? I am going to go to Heather, because Heather is our fish ID queen, right? She knows all about the the marine life. So Heather, what are some of the most common invasive species in the Bahamas, and how do they threaten our marine ecosystem?
Yeah, so the one everybody should know about is lionfish. You might have seen it on your plate at a restaurant or on the menu or even at the fish market. But the truth of lionfish is that they're outcompeting a lot of the organisms that are already in our ecosystems. And what we mean by that is that they reproduce at a very high rate, about 50,000 eggs every 3 days. They outcompete, so they have no predators. Nothing eats them, so they constantly just keep reproducing and they're not getting eaten or a part of that food chain or food web, so they'd be separate. And so that's why when we have invasive species, they kind of mess with our food chains and our food webs, so they cause an imbalance. So if they overeat one species, we might see a drastic fall in another trophic level of that food chain. So
for lionfish, what are they eating? Because you said what are lionfish eating?
So lionfish eat everything, anything that they can really fit in their mouths. They eat a lot of small fish, little crustaceans, and they usually eat them whole. Yeah.
So what kind of species are they eating? Is it anything that we are trying to conserve or preserve? Not necessarily. Okay. And you said every 3 days, 50,000 eggs every 3 days? Seriously? Yeah.
So you can imagine all the lionfish that we don't see, even in scuba diving trips with our outreach team, we constantly see lionfish at deeper depths than you would be surprised to see a lionfish at. You know, there are 60 feet down, I've dove before and seen a lionfish. And even around docks where there's a lot of boat traffic, you'll find a lot of more baby lionfish. But they're in every ecosystem now, and they're outcompeting almost every organism and every food web and every food chain. So that's why we encourage people to really catch lionfish and eat lionfish as an alternative.
So other than us, who is eating them? Is anything else under there eating lionfish, or it's just us?
Some people have reported that groupers have tried. They've seen a few groupers try and attempt to eat lionfish. But other than that, I haven't heard of anything really eating lionfish in the ocean.
Wow. That's a serious issue. So the lionfish is often highlighted as this major invasive species. How did it arrive here, and why is it causing such a huge problem?
So, like the previous one, there's also some speculations on how lionfish got introduced to our ecosystems. So some people say that after a hurricane, someone's aquarium tank allowed them to enter canal systems and go out to the oceans, and from there enter ecosystems. Some people say that they had them in their aquarium and they're moving and they didn't want them anymore, so they threw them in the canal. Or some people say bilge water from ships, which is highly unlikely, but that's also one of the ways that they can come over. And so different methods, different ways. Yeah.
Okay. Very interesting. So what impact does invasive species have on the biodiversity of coral reefs and marine life?
Jasmine. I would like to add, the thing is, when we say lionfish outcompete species, we mean that they're reproducing, like Heather said, at a rate that is not sustainable, and they're eating all of the other food sources in the ocean. And they're there are food webs that actually support these ecosystems. And what invasive species do is they replace the native food sources. And that's on every level. So we see lionfish in the nursery systems. We see them on the seagrass beds. We see them in the open ocean and on the coral reefs. So all of the food that is available to other species, they're eating up. So all of the popularly traded fish species, such as our grouper, our conch, our crawfish, their populations are going to keep on decreasing. So, and that's one of the main issues that we're facing with the invasive species lionfish.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to just make a small pivot right here. We're going to talk about invasive species, because we know that we have invasive species in our oceans. But what about when you move further up? So what about when we talk about our mangrove wetlands? What about when we talk about our terrestrial or land-based ecosystems? What does invasive species in those areas look like, Jasmine?
I'm so glad you asked that, Crystal, because we do have some invasive species here on land. One of the common ones are casuarinas, and we actually have two species of casuarinas in the Bahamas, and they are causing a lot of coastal erosions. And what that means is we have special types of plant that exist on the coastal environments. We call them strand vegetation, and they're so special because they're really good at anchoring the coast when we're thinking about wave action, when we're thinking about, you know, wind, and even just regular traffic. So, but what the casuarina does is it doesn't do a really good job of anchoring down the coastal sand and other material on the beaches or on the coastline. So all of that would be swept away, and the beaches are getting smaller. There's less, you know, the beaches are getting smaller. That's a huge impact. And then also too, the strand vegetation, like I said, if you actually get to see the network of those roots, they're really awesome at holding down the coastline, and it's really good and acts as another barrier for storms. And we know that the hurricanes are increasing in intensities. Mm-hmm. So having that anchoring system is really important to protect us, because these waves, when all of the coastal ecosystems are destroyed, the next step is in our doorstep. So yeah, that's really important.
I really feel like that's a super important point that we don't often think of, because usually people, you know, when they think about the coastal systems, they feel like it's something so far away from them. They say, oh, coral reefs, you know, like they're all the way in the water. You know, whatever happens to them, like that's not going to affect me. But you just said, and also with the mangroves, oh, you know, the mangroves, whatever, they could be here, or if someone takes them away, who cares? How is it going to impact me? So a lot of people, aside from the very sentimental, the sentimental part of having these beautiful beaches and oceans and mangroves that people cherish, there is also a very real impact that could be severe at times, depending on what happens. And we talked about natural disasters. Jasmine, you mentioned hurricanes and sea level rise, strong storms, right? Those are what break our storm wave energy, and also the trees, they break the wind as well. So those are really important to keep in mind. But while we're talking about this, I want to kind of bring Samantha in where we talk about sustainable development, because there are a lot of people, like I said, who are going to say, you know, other than, you know, if I'm not sentimental, why should I care, right? So talk about how sustainable development ties into what we're talking about, these the importance of native species being there for the future.
Yeah, so both you and Jasmine touched on really good points. But specific to sustainable development, I think it's really important to know and to understand that if we don't take care of our marine ecosystems, and if we don't take care of reducing these invasive species, we're going to end up with collapsed ecosystems, because these food chains are going to be thrown out of balance. And if those are thrown out of balance, then that starts affecting us too. That means that we're going to be finding less grouper, we're going to be finding less queen conch, we're going to have less beaches that, like you said, can manage that storm wave energy when these hurricanes come. So making sure that we are taking care of this invasive species problem, and also that we're making sustainable choices in our own lives that help encourage, planting mangroves to absorb water and to also mm-hmm. break the waves, or also planting trees and making sure that we're not letting the casuarina trees keep on invading our beaches and making them smaller. Those are really good points as to how we can kind of make small choices in our life, like planting these, and help sustainable development for the better. And yeah.
I'm so glad you mm-hmm. said that, Samantha, in reference to planting trees. The native trees are, like, when the casuarina grows, the native trees don't grow anymore. So I just wanted to add that point.
And on that point, can you just define the difference between a native plant and an invasive plant?
Yes.
Because, or invasive because, species?
Yeah, because a lot of people, you know, it's up in the air sometimes. But I also, before you explain the difference, I'm glad that Samantha brought up flooding, because we don't think about flooding. Flooding is an issue we have every year, and it seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. When our mangroves are taken out of the scenario, the flooding gets worse. We do see more extreme effects of flooding. We do have more areas that flood because there's nothing to absorb that. So the mangroves are really, really important for helping to absorb a lot of that excess water when we have rain. So that's inland as well as on the coast. But Jasmine, you can continue your point about the difference between invasive and native species.
Okay, so native species would be any type of plant or animal that exists, that occurs naturally in an environment. And an invasive species is typically is non-native, but it also has a feature where it grows at a rapid rate, and wherever it grows, the native species have a problem thriving in that area. So it isn't just like, you know, like, for example, we do have some non-native trees that we plant in our yard, you know, probably just to beautify it, but you don't see that plant rapidly increasing and outcompeting the natural plants that are in that area. And then, like, and also in the ocean concept, the ocean doesn't have a fence or anything so you can see a species that don't normally exist in one area, but it's going to be kind of like a one-off situation. It's non-typical, mm-hmm. and they're not, and the effect of the next ecosystem is very minimal. So that's a really good question. So
Heather, you wanted to add something to that?
Yeah, and on that note, I really would encourage people to encourage bringing native plants into your yard and really planting a native garden. That could be a little task mm-hmm. of yours. So you can really gain appreciation for these species and plants that are really native to our Bahamian landscapes. And even if you're not really a water person, you can feel free to buy lionfish at the fish market. We often encourage people to eat lionfish because it helps to keep the populations down. Like we said, invasive species do reproduce at a very rapid rate. So just eating lionfish as a substitute for grouper, I heard it tastes similar, would be one step that you can do towards helping the fight towards invasive species.
Okay, so while we're on that, on this lionfish topic again, there are some concerns, and I've heard this over and over again, where there's a misconception, and listen carefully, a misconception that lionfish is poisonous. Can either Heather or Jasmine break down this myth and what is really happening with the lionfish?
Yeah, so we hear all the time some fishermen are afraid to catch lionfish because they think it's poisonous. And however, it is dangerous, it's not poisonous. So there's venomous and then there's poisonous. So those are two things that can harm you if you're swimming around in the sea and something bites you, stings you, and these, the main difference between these two is the level of degree of urgency. So poisonous would be in a situation where it's life-threatening, and we would suggest that that person go to the emergency room and get checked out, and it's probably going to be very painful and not easily alleviated, whereas the venomous just hurts a lot. You might be incapacitated from the pain, but not as a result of the venom. So when you are handling lionfish, we do encourage you to handle it with proper sturdy gloves mm-hmm. and to clip off the spines before you go ahead and start dissecting it to cook it or for a scientific exploration, which we also encourage schools. If you have a person who is familiar with handling lionfish, that's a great opportunity for teachers to teach fish insides and physiology and learn about that scientific process as well.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And they also have a lot of YouTube tutorials. I actually saw several where they have people also in the Bahamas cutting off the venomous spines of the lionfish, and they show you where all of the parts are that are venomous, and you just cut it off or cut around it, and it's fine. We used to have a lot more in the past, a lot of lionfish like tacos and lionfish fingers at restaurants. I don't see them as much anymore, but this is a call again. I love lionfish. I know a lot of people who do. They're very soft and tender. So I just hope that the demand increases for that again and we could continue to enjoy it.
Crystal, that's so important what you said. It all boils down to education. You just need to know how to handle it, how to handle lionfish properly. If the demand will happen, if we demand it, we're the consumers, if we go start asking for lionfish, there'll be the persons in the restaurant would probably, you know, have a demand for lionfish in their restaurants, and then it trickles down to the fishermen, but then also the fishermen are not going to catch it if they don't know how to handle it properly. So that's why it's very important that you have that education element first to know how to safely deal with lionfish. But it is very delicious, and take it from me, I've had it before. It really is a strong competition with grouper, and I'm an island girl.
It's so incredibly.
You can trust my opinion here.
So. It is incredibly tender, everyone. Yes. It is amazing. If you ever had lionfish tacos, I know the golf course at Bahamar, I forget the name of it, Royal Blue, I think it is. They used to sell some really, really, really good lionfish tacos. I'm not sure if they still do it.
Yeah, and some people even take it a step further and make lionfish jewelry. I met one person who had the spine of a lionfish in his ring mm-hmm. or making a necklace out of it and mm-hmm. using the spines as little decorative pieces once you've cut them appropriately and prepared them appropriately. There is a special way to prepare lionfish spines. You can't just go ahead and add them into the jewelry. So make sure if you are interested in creating jewelry from lionfish, mm-hmm. you go ahead and do your proper research mm-hmm. because we don't want anybody getting hurt from any of the venom in the spines.
Yeah, and the patterns are beautiful. If you've ever seen a lionfish, it will take you, you'll be in awe by the beauty of it. Although it is equally as threatening to our local species, like we said, like the grouper, that we love so much. And this is why we have closed seasons, everyone. For species like the Nassau grouper, the stone crab, we also have the stone crab, the grouper, and the crawfish as well, to protect our fisheries. And so let's talk about closed seasons, right? Why are these periods essential for sustainability? Heather, you're giving me a look. You have something you want to put in?
I just wanted to make sure our viewers knew what to do if they got stung by a lionfish.
Oh, yes.
So very if you important. Are stuck, or like our boss likes to say, juck by a lionfish spine, fear not. There are ways to alleviate the pain. Some ways you can do it is by sticking the affected area in mm-hmm. very hot water, not hot enough to hurt you, but just close to that limit mm-hmm. what you can withstand. And that will help to denature the proteins and the enzymes that are working to cause you all this pain. and just soak whatever got stung, let's say it's your thumb, your finger, in that hot water, and it should help with the pain.
Mm. Yeah. And while we're talking about this too, I remember somebody telling me that they were afraid that a lionfish was going to get them. And I was like, what do you mean, get you? And yeah. If you've ever snorkeled and seen a lionfish, they are the slowest.
They're so slow.
Like, they are incredibly slow and still in the water. So they're easy to catch. So it is not something where you have to be chasing, or it's not a fish that's going to like just immediately swim away really fast. It is very easy to catch, and they are kind of lazy. I guess that's a part of why they call them lionfish as well.
And that, again, is because they have no predators, so they have no sense of something's coming to eat me. So they'll just carry on their merry way.
It's interesting. Okay, so let's shift over to the close seasons as well. Let's talk about close seasons for the species like the Nassau grouper. Why are these periods of close seasons essential for sustainability? I'm going to ask this to Samantha. Why is it important? Why is close seasons and sustainability and these types of practices good for us as a country?
So first off, close seasons refer to periods in a year where you are not able to go fishing for a certain species. So you mentioned Nassau grouper. I don't know if someone wants to mention when the close season is for that.
December 1st to February 28th.
So that means that from December 1st to February 28th, you are not able to eat grouper, go fishing for grouper. And the reason that they do this, or that these laws are set in place, is because that is the time in which the groupers are
spawning.
Spawning, yes. So it really gives them a chance to reproduce and to build up their population again, so that then we can go back and get some more groupers. If we were to not respect these laws, and if we were to just keep fishing and fishing and fishing and fishing, eventually there would be no fish left, because there are so many people that want grouper because it tastes so, so good, and we do not have enough groupers that are reproducing quickly enough. And so that means that we're eating and eating, and we're not replacing them, and we're just going to end up with no species if they're not protected. So they're very, very important.
Okay. Heather?
And on that note, we could also see a future where the fish we love to eat, we can't even afford to purchase anymore. Because if we catch them in the close seasons and their populations are so small that fishermen have to exert more energy and more resources to catching these fish, and they have lower amounts of fish that they catch, and they still have to pay their bills, manage their family, and so they're gonna have to raise the price of these fishes if we don't stay without the close seasons, you know. And so it's really important when we say close seasons, not just to think of it as, oh, they're trying to enforce rules on me, but this is a strategically thought out thing that takes into account their spawning processes and avoiding us having to pay exorbitant amounts for the fish that we eat every day.
Okay, Jasmine, you want to add anything to that?
So and like Heather say, it's going to be out of our reach. And our food is very important to Bahamian culture.
Yes.
So, I mean, so
you 100% Krupa. Yeah.
Our fisheries are really important to our culture. So if we can imagine not having crawfish or conch salad, you know, all of these popularly traded fisheries, that's going to impact how we live. So it's really important that we take in consideration the human element as well. So that's why we should respect close seasons. And another reason, another way we can do that too, even though there are policies in place in reference to having fish during the close season, you know, you do have to show the proper documentation. But you, as the consumer, like I say, we do control the market. We can just stop eating those fish during closed season, so the demand won't be there. So even though that, you know, certain restaurants would still have their stock during the closed season, let's not order it, and then we are in turn decreasing that demand, and then decreasing the stress on those populations as well.
Yeah. And while we're talking about close seasons, I think a lot of people, they would say, I don't eat fish. I don't eat, you know, like, I don't care. I don't eat fish. But all of these things are very important because they also contribute to the livelihoods of many Bahamians. It's our fisheries economy. So it's very good for economic stability, right? It's a whole industry. And when we talk about fisheries like the crawfish, where we have the closed seasons, like what Heather mentioned, the crawfish industry brings in about $57 million a year. So there are a lot of people to the Bahamas. So there are a lot of people making money, a lot of Bahamians making money off these things. And sometimes that is one fishery, maybe something that sustains someone's, one person's whole livelihood. Not one person, but you know, many people who are in the industry, their livelihood depends on one fishery. So we have to be very careful about how we go about and respecting the closed seasons without splurging.
And then Jasmine? Also, what you, I'm glad you said that, but then also when we put in perspective that our marine resources are a big part of our tourism product, and we're breaking records every year in reference to our tourism product. Persons actually go diving and snorkeling and all of these boat excursions just to see these things in nature. So if it's not there, if we're taking out snorkelers or divers and we don't get to see anything, mm-hmm. I think that'd be a problem.
That's very true.
Yeah, and if anybody is unfamiliar with when the closed season are, you can reference our website. We have all of the fishery regulations noted on our website on our fishery regulations poster at brief.org, or you can come into our office and we have wallet-sized handouts that give you all the information you need on size limits, fishery regulations, closed seasons, and all those things. And also keep up to date with Department of Marine Resources and Department of Fisheries, as they often update the regulations and post new ones or adjust ones that are in place.
For sure. And if you want to see everything that Heather spoke about, you can visit our website at breef.org. That's brief.org, the Bahamas Reef Environment Educational Foundation. Thank you so much for that, Heather. So I want to, continue this great conversation and kind of move along a little bit from the individual level. We spoke about our own personal responsibilities as Bahamians, but now we want to talk about our communities, right? So what role can our communities play in preserving native species and maintaining healthy ecosystems? And this is for fisheries as well as our terrestrial, because sometimes we forget about our terrestrial, seeing that the majority of the Bahamas is literally water. Heather, I'm going to ask you about the marine, for the marine side of things first. What role can local communities play in preserving native species and maintaining healthy marine ecosystems?
Yeah. So a great module that Brief does is that we host annual lionfish culls. So you'd obviously have to get permission from the appropriate authorities. But what we do is we encourage fishermen to catch lionfish. And so we have a prize for the biggest lionfish, the smallest lionfish.
The person who catches the most lionfish.
The most lionfish. And it's always surprising every year how many people we see that come and submit lionfish, or how many people we see are afraid to mm-hmm. even enter the competition because they're unfamiliar, they lack the proper experience or exposure to the education on how to really handle it, like yes. we said. So really taking that into account, if you are a coastal community, you know, it's a great way to get involved and really have a cookout, have a lionfish festival in your hometown. Really get involved in really finding different ways that we can catch lionfish and eat lionfish and integrate it into our culture as Bahamians.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well said. Jasmine.
Well, I would say education. That's one of our pillars at Brief. Education is so important because if Nelson Mandela once said, you know, that education was just the most powerful weapon mm-hmm. to change, for change. So it's like when we think about that, we can encourage schools to book a field trip here with Brief. We encourage young persons to involve themselves in programs such as our Young Reporters for the Environment, where you get to learn about these issues. Mm-hmm. And also, a lot of persons probably not until today knew that you can eat lionfish. So now this is your
this is a sign.
This is your role.
This is our call to you.
Yes. So this is your role now to I be a little bit curious and try something new and try lionfish and go to your fish market, request it. Then also, if you're a fisherman and you don't know how to check online, we will help you. We won't turn down someone who's interested in learning how to deal with lionfish.
And I am somebody who's also interested in eating lionfish. So you can also reach out to me as well.
Yeah. So and then also too, like I said previously, we drive the market. So we're being a sustainable citizen. Let's adhere to the closed seasons. Let's leave nature where it is. If you don't know, you probably should not bother it. So, I mean, mm-hmm. When we go out, we said the only things on all of our field trip that you're allowed to take is photos. So if we all have that type of idea, that type of behavior, that mm-hmm. those small little sustainable behaviors like Samantha mm-hmm. says, they make a huge impact, especially when mm-hmm. everybody's doing it.
Amazing. Wonderful. Samantha, I'm going to ask you the last question. I'm going to close this out today. What role, and the same question in a different way, what role can local communities play in preserving healthy, sustainable ecosystems in the Bahamas? How can the community make a difference in all of this that we're talking about? And helping us to preserve?
Well, honestly, I would just summarize the same 4 points that have been told over and over again. It would be eat lionfish, reduce your consumption of vulnerable species, follow regulations, and educate yourself and raise awareness on these topics, because honestly, it all starts with understanding and identifying the fact that there is a problem. If you don't know there's a problem, you can't help fix it. So yeah, just that in 4 little points.
Okay, thank you so much, Samantha. Thank you, Heather, Jasmine, for joining us. I'm your host, Crystal. Thank you so much to our listening audience. Tune in once again, same place, same time next week, for another episode of Our Blue Bahamas.